From the City of Angels off the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be, across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. What a show we have in store for you tonight. First of all, more ratings coming in. I want to say thank you to all of you in these cities. Actually, all of you around this country, but these are the few that I have right now. Number one ratings in all these cities: Houston, KTRH, Seattle, KVI, Tampa, WFLA, Minneapolis, my old hometown, one of them, KSDP, Phoenix, KFYI, Miami, WIOD, Denver, KHOW, Sacramento, KSTE, Orlando, WFLF, Portland, KEX. I'll have a few more for you tomorrow and next week as well. Thank you so much, all of you who continue to listen and support Coast to Coast AM. Next hour, world-renowned Jay-Z Knight, who channels Ramtha, a 35,000-year-old warrior from Atlantis. Get ready for that one. Very controversial person, but she has undergone some tests done by some scientists. They say she's authentic. World leaders are expressing concern tonight that North Korea will quit the six-party nuclear disarmament talks and will bolster its nuclear weapons arsenal. We reported on this story late last night before we went off the air. Now, U.S. Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice says that North Korea is risking further world isolation because everyone in the international community, and most especially North Korea's neighbors, have been very clear that there needs to be no nuclear weapons on the Korean Peninsula in order to maintain stability in that region. The report was North Korea's first public admission that it possessed nuclear weapons. North Korea previously has asserted its ability and right to produce them. Now, in April of 2003, U.S. officials said that North Koreans claim in private meetings that they had at least one nuclear bomb. Some observers in Washington say North Korea may be posturing for a more preferable negotiating position in light of recent developments regarding the suspected nuclear program in Iran as well. So we've got our hands tied in the world community with a couple of these countries, don't we? Palestinian leader Mahmoud Abbas has sacked his top security commanders already in the Gaza Strip just hours after militants violated a truce agreement with Israel. The dismissals are punitive measures against officers, he says, who failed to do their duty. Hamas militants, by the way, say a mortar attack on an Israeli settlement was a response to violence, not a breach of the ceasefire. It said it was retaliating for the death of a Gaza man killed by Israeli fire overnight. A veteran civil rights lawyer has been convicted in New York of crossing the line by smuggling messages of violence from one of her jailed clients, a radical Egyptian sheikh, to his terrorist disciples on the outside. The jury deliberated 13 days over the past month before finally convicting Lynn Stewart, a 65-year-old, a left-wing activist known for representing radicals and revolutionaries in her 30 years on the New York legal scene. Now, the trial, which began last June, focused attention on the line between zealous advocacy and criminal behavior by a lawyer. Some defense lawyers saw the case as a government warning to attorneys to tread carefully in terrorism cases. Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez called the verdict an important step in the war on terror. The convictions handed down by a federal jury in New York send a clear, unmistakable message that this department will pursue both those who carry out acts of terrorism and those who assist them with their murderous goals. A United Airlines pilot who also flew for the National Guard told a woman that he wanted to crash a plane into Wall Street because some people made easy money there. The pilot, a 44-year-old out of San Diego, has been arrested by FBI agents with the Joint Terrorism Task Force of Western New York, charged with lying on a military application for a security clearance. Pleaded not guilty, was released on a $10,000 bond. Pope John Paul II has returned to the Vatican after spending 9 days in Rome's hospital, the Gemelli Hospital. Aides strung plastic sheets between the hospital exit and the Popemobile vehicle to keep the Pope from the cold weather. He waved to crowds lining the streets of Rome as his motorcade swept by on its way to the papal apartments, Earlier, the Vatican announced that the 84-year-old pontiff had recovered after being admitted on February 1st with throat spasms brought on by the flu. And they said that had they not gotten him to the hospital, he could have died within 10 minutes. The German Postal Service, talk about being slow, has delivered a card addressed to Adolf Hitler 60 years after his death. The card had been sent from the United Kingdom and was addressed to the Führer Adolf Hitler, German Parliament in Berlin, Germany. It arrived at the German Parliamentary Building with a postal service comment saying that it had been readdressed because of faulty address. According to some, parliamentary officials think the postal service has displayed bad taste, but a post office spokesman said that it wasn't up to them to decide not to deliver the mail. As long as an address exists, cards and letters will be delivered regardless of whether the person there is still alive or not. They didn't say if they opened up the letter, who sent it, and what the contents might have been. Veteran shuttle astronaut Frederick Gregory will take over as NASA's acting administrator next week. Gregory is currently second in command at the space agency. He will step into the top job until President Bush nominates Richard C. Hoagland or someone to replace Sean O'Keefe. O'Keefe's last official day is Friday, citing personal and financial reasons. O'Keefe decided in December to take a job as chancellor of Louisiana State University's Baton Rouge campus after 3 years as NASA's chief. Gregory's a 64-year-old. He was selected as an astronaut in 1978, and he flew on three shuttle missions. By the way, Richard C. Hoagland will be our guest tomorrow for the first hour of the program. We're going to talk a little bit about some of the things on Saturn's moons. All of that a prelude to a full program with Richard C. in the very close future. Well, last year was the fourth warmest year on average for our planet since the late 1800s. Now, to determine if the Earth is warming or cooling, scientists look at average temperatures. To get an average temperature, the scientists take the warmest and coolest temperatures in any given day, calculate the temperature, and that is exactly in the middle of those high and low values, and they say that things are getting very, very warm. Globally, 1998 has proven to be the warmest year on record, with 2002 and 2003 coming in second and third. They say there's been a strong warming trend over the past 30 years. They say primarily to an increase in greenhouse gases in the atmosphere. I still contend we have had global warming on this planet since its inception, and it's not all that. It's a cycle. A moderate earthquake that rattled parts of Arkansas and Tennessee Thursday should serve as a wake-up call to the central United States about the potential for much stronger events, according to experts. The Tembler, a preliminary, put at magnitude 4.1, shook eastern Arkansas and western Tennessee early in the morning. It's centered 47 miles north-northwest of Memphis. No reports of significant damage. Although today's earthquake, they say, was what we characterize as light, this area is capable of producing an earthquake that can result in significant loss of life and property damage. As a matter of fact, the infamous series of three New Madrid quakes in 1811 to 1812 occurred a few weeks apart. And that occurred December 16 through February 7th. They measured 8.1, 8, 7.8, and at the time represented three of the four strongest earthquakes ever recorded in the lower 48 states. In a moment, our guest will be Jim Birkeland. We're going to get Jim's take on this earthquake in the New Madrid Fault area and also have Jim look into the future for us as he does so well. Geologist Jim Birkeland was suspended from a California government geology job. What happened? Well, he made a prediction that a major quake would occur during the 1989 World Series in the Oakland Bay area. It did, and the government told him, never make any more predictions again, Jim. Well, now that he's retired, he publicly states quake windows, a lot of them right here on the show. Mr. Berkland uses tidal flooding tables based on lunar perigee, time when the moon is closest to the Earth to affect more gravitational pull on the Earth. He's our guest this hour. We'll probably take calls with Jim next half of the hour, as a lot of you are very concerned about all this very strange activity these days. Jim, did you see something like this coming? This earthquake in the New Madrid area?
No, but it's not that unusual. I would hope that people would get on my website and report these things, because my seismic windows, and we're in one right now, are related to the maximum tidal forces, as you mentioned. And then to pin down the place, though, we need local effects such as spring activity, you know, changing water quality or quantity, temperature, and animal action especially. I wonder if near this area in Blytheville, Arkansas, if the dogs were howling all night, if the birds were stopped chirping, and if they'd had some lowered production of milk and eggs. And there are many, many clues, but most people overlook them or think they're not important. And that's why my website at Syzygy.
And you got to spell that, Jim. You know that.
Yes. It's SYZYGY and then JOB.com. .org.
All right. You got both now. Good.
Yes. Syzygy Job. And Syzygy just means a lining up of the sun, moon, and earth. If you have a thick dictionary, you'll find it in there. But to show how important this is, if you have a newer full moon at the same time as the moon is close, then you get the double whammy. And that's when it's called the Perigean Spring Tide by the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. And when the astronauts first went onto the moon, they left some seismographs behind about the first four times.
Right.
They absolutely proved that there are moonquakes, and they established without any doubt whatsoever that most of the moonquakes occur at the time of perigee, when the Earth and moon are closest and the Earth's gravity affects the moon the greatest.
Now, when you say perigee also, is that new moon, full moon?
No, that is perigee, near Earth. So once a month, the moon's orbit around the Earth is at its close point, and then 2 weeks later it's at its far point, or apogee. But the close point is the important thing.
Okay, and what kind of a moon could we have at that time? Could be anything, right? Could be a half moon, full moon, does it matter?
True. The closest approach, the perigee, varies day by day.
Okay.
It's not in sync with the full moon to full moon, 29 and a half days. Perigee to perigee is 27 and a half days.
All right.
So they get out of phase, and so half the year my seismic window goes with the full moon, and the other half of the year with the new moon, depending on which syzygy has the perigee. And so these terms are, you know, many people now are getting more and more confident about using them. Perigee, near Earth, and remember that when we're near the moon, when the moon is near the Earth, only around 221,000 miles, 2 weeks later it's about 253,000 miles, so it makes a big difference.
Easiest just to get to your website, because I'm sure you point out when we're in this position, don't you?
Yes, and it opened up on the 6th, and it runs through the 13th. Now, we've already had five quakes of 6 magnitude around the world, which is fairly unusual in just a few days' time.
And when the huge earthquake hit, the 9.3 now, because they've changed it from a 9 on December 26th, we were in that window as well, weren't we?
It was the opening, it was a full moon.
Yep.
on the 26th. And interestingly, the last 9, which was in Alaska, and they gave that a 9.2 in March 27th of 1964,
mm-hmm.
Guess what? Day of the full moon.
Yeah.
And it was also at the time of day when the tides were extremely low, and so the Earth's crust was rebounding from the weight of the previous high tide. It was down very low, and so it's like the crust is responding similarly to taking a wire between your fingers and wiggling it, and you move it up and down, and at some point you're going to hit metal fatigue as the wire warms up with frictional resistance, and you get metal fatigue and pop, it breaks.
Jim, I have moved to California from Missouri, where I spend 80% of my time.
Oh.
But I go back to Missouri 20% of the time. I'm trapped. The New Madrid Fault and the all the other faults that are out here, but the New Madrid Fault is the big one, isn't it?
Well, it had larger quakes than anything on the West Coast here, except maybe the Alaskan quake in 64. But, yeah, you're right. And, you know, that first one on the 16th of December, 1911,
mm-hmm.
just the day after the new moon.
And I'm told that even though the population was very sparse in those days, the damage was incredible.
Well, the physical damage to the earth. Now, there were only just a few villages out there,
yeah.
Indian villages, too. And so when you see the death toll, only a few people died, they were totally ignoring the Indians that drowned when the Mississippi changed course and flooded a lot of the lowlands.
Good point. Good point. And
yeah.
Also, they say that the quakes were so strong that you could feel them as far away as Boston and
yep.
Washington, D.C.
Absolutely. Yep. And back in 1886, they had the biggest quake on the East Coast, which was at Charleston, South Carolina. Now, Charleston felt those New Madrid quakes, but New Madrid did not feel the Charleston quake. It was about a 7. And there it was on the 31st of August in 1886, 2 days after the new moon, 2 days after perigee, and it was the best window of the year. If I'd been around, I could have predicted that period too, and I would hope that people would report about the well level changes and the
good point.
And the animals.
Good point. We'll take some calls in the next half hour, Jim. Maybe you'll get some information. The serious part of all this, though, is this. In California, for example, and other parts of the West, many of these older buildings and roadways have now been retrofitted to withstand magnitude 6 to 7s. But in buildings around the New Madrid Fault, and I know St. Louis specifically, they have not done anything to retrofit some of these buildings. I'm not even sure about the St. Louis Arch, for example, if that could withstand a big earthquake.
Well, I don't know. I'm sure that modern engineering went into it and seismological investigations. They just could not ignore it. But we thought that, you know, that the San Francisco-Oakland Bay Bridge was was stable, too. And it failed with the World Series quake. You know, we really need in this country a steady state of earthquake preparedness, not this feast or famine that we always seem to be faced with. It's only right after a quake that people get really concerned and try to get earthquake insurance. And, of course, the insurance company then won't sell it to you for a while. You have to wait till things settle down.
Is there anything, though, Jim, we really can do? I mean, aren't we at the mercy of Mother Nature here?
Oh, no. Oh, no. Remember, earthquakes don't kill people. It's falling objects and power lines.
True. But, I mean, you don't know where to go. I mean, here's an example. These poor people who all died in the tsunami.
Oh.
One could say, don't live on the coasts because just don't do this. Well, how are you going to say that to people along the eastern coast of the United States? How are you going to say that to people who are on the western coast of the United States, where buildings have been built, homes have been built? They can't just pick up and go now. They're stuck.
Well, in many cases, well, like with a tsunami, you do have, if it was across the ocean, you've got many hours. If it was close, then you don't have much choice. But the main thing is to understand that if the sea withdraws, you don't go out collecting seashells and fish.
Well, I agree with that. But with earthquakes, for example, how do you know exactly when and where? Now, you're getting close to the when, but not necessarily the where. And I think you'd admit that, right?
Not in case of the World Series quake.
Well, you were right there.
No,
but I mean, it's not that easy.
All this additional information. We had rare whales beaching themselves in San Francisco and at Santa Cruz. It's never happened before or since. We had homing pigeons getting lost. The top birds couldn't find their way home, and one flew the coop just the night before the quake. We had the most missing pets in the lost and found columns that I'd ever seen. And, you know, I was monitoring it for days since the physicist with Xerox told me about it in 1979. So every day I would look at the local papers, and I've got them all in my catalog now, the daily changes. And so I was used to seeing 3 or 4 missing cats, and when they went to 27, that was a whole different world.
All right.
The World Series quake.
Let's open up the phone lines, Jim. What do you want to hear from people besides just their questions, because I'm sure they have a lot for you? What would you like to hear?
I want to hear some animal reactions near Blytheville in Arkansas. Now, let me tell you first, since I'm waiting to get on your show, I went through the Arkansas quakes, found 18 quakes since 1900, and 15 of the 18 were in my window.
All right, stay with us. We'll be back in a moment with geologist Jim Berkland. You've heard what he wants. Phone lines are open. I'm George Norrie. This is Coast to Coast AM. We'll give you the numbers in just a moment, those of you who don't have them.
Subscribe to After Dark. Call toll-free 1-888-727-5505. Call the Wildcard line at area code 818-501-4109. The first-time caller line is area code 818-501-4721. To talk with George toll-free from east of the Rockies, call 1-800-825-5033. West of the Rockies, toll-free at 1-800-618-8255. International callers may reach George Norrie by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5, and dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From the City of Angels, this is Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie.
And we'll take your phone calls with our guest geologist Jim Berkland in a moment right here on Coast to Coast AM. The end of February, that is it. We will no longer make available the Mel's Hole story, the interview that Art Bell did some time ago. We give that to you when you subscribe or renew the After Dark newsletter. Call 1-888-727-5505. That's 1-888-727-5505 to subscribe to the After Dark newsletter. Take advantage of this or go online at coasttocoastam.com. The February issue, by the way, is a dandy. If you like ghost stories, you're going to love this one. We'll be back. And welcome back to Coast, I'm George Norrie. Jim, the largest recorded earthquake, of course, was the 9.5 on this planet that occurred in Chile in 1960. And now this December 26 earthquake that caused the tsunami, which was a 9, has now moved into second place at a 9.3, passing up the Prince William Sound, Alaska earthquake, which is apparently dropped down to third now. Still pretty big, huh?
Okay, and I've seen that with a couple of geophysicists came up with that 9.3, but I haven't seen it confirmed yet. It's still considered 9 on most of the places I've checked.
Okay, so we'll see if they confirm it or not, but that's what they're saying. This is a new analysis by several experts.
It takes more than two new guys looking at it, yeah.
Okay, let's go to the phones. You ready?
Sure.
Let's go to our wild card line. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hello, hi. Hello.
Hello. Yes.
Yay.
Hello?
Yeah, yes. Can you hear us?
Yes.
Then go ahead.
Yes. Yes, I was calling. I've been having some unusual dreams about that tsunami. And what's really got me worried, I never thought about an earthquake actually happening in the ocean. So it's been really troubling me, all the people that died.
Well, they happen all the time, don't they, Jim?
Oh, yes. In fact, most of the big quakes are around the Pacific in the ocean, most of the big ones. Did you have your dreams before the December 26th? Or just afterwards. Okay. I thought you said, did you have dreams that are troubling to you?
Yes, I've been having these dreams. They come in kind of like once or twice a week. And it's just devastating.
Yes,
you know, that
well,
way the waves, that you can't control nature. And it's really troubling me.
Well, as I wrote in my newsletter for January, usually I'm very optimistic and looking forward to the year, but that was such a catastrophe, maybe one of the greatest natural disasters we ever had, probably was.
How do you equate dreams, animal behavior? Is it all one of the same here, Jim?
No, not at all. Dreams, I myself have had three dreams that were prophetic for earthquakes, but not since the World Series quake. 1 week before, I woke up in the middle of the night, just sure we had a large earthquake, and I said, do you feel that? My wife said, what? We didn't have any earthquake. And I said, oh, come on. And so I went downstairs and turned on the radio to hear about the reports of this big quake, and there wasn't any. That was exactly 1 week ahead of time. It was on the 10th of October, and the quake was on the 17th.
Next up, first-time caller line, you're on the air with us. Hi there.
Hello?
Yeah, where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Wichita, Kansas.
All right, go ahead.
Yeah, I'm a geology student, and I've learned that when major earthquakes happen, that the pressure on the plates releases, and some of that pressure can be transferred to other plates. I was wondering if the tsunami earthquake was powerful enough to perhaps send more pressure and increase the chances of having a major earthquake over on the West Coast.
This is a fairly common thought, and it doesn't often happen. But there was this professor from Japan named Dr. Omori, and he noted in 1906, in early April, that 1899 there was a pair of huge quakes on the Alaskan Peninsula, and then on March 31st, there was another great earthquake down in South America. So he looked towards the Americas, and he said, well, looks like the next big one will be on the west coast of North America, Mexico, or more likely, California. And this is about 2 weeks ahead of our great San Francisco earthquake. By the way, the next year is the 100th anniversary of it. And just in time, a book on what I've been doing is coming out this December. The man who predicts earthquakes, Jim Berkland, Renegade Geologist.
That's him. Okay, Jim, the work you've done in this arena, I think, is second to none. And though there are a lot of other conventional geologists who are doing very good work at what they do, you bring a different perspective, a new twist to this, and I appreciate it.
Well, I'm the only one that's successfully predicting earthquakes, the only geologist. And
for the last 10 years,
most other geologists have been very reluctant to even mention the word prediction.
Let's go to our West of the Rockies line. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi, George. Hello, Jim.
Hey,
my name's Jeff.
Hi, Jeff.
I was just considering your whole theory about how the moon and gravitational pull moves all the water around, and it makes perfect common sense.
Yeah.
How would that affect, in the same manner, the magma in, like, the mantle or the core of the Earth?
Exactly. Sure.
Why would that be any different than water? I realize it's thicker and has a different consistency, but it should move just like oceans and water would do, wouldn't it?
Well, that's a brilliant thought, and it's occurred to a few geophysicists and seismologists and volcanologists, and indeed, it's a lot more accepted that volcanoes respond to maximum tidal forces than when it comes to earthquakes.
To me, it would seem like if you took the Earth and hypothetically, in your imagination, shrunk it down to the size of, let's say, a tennis ball, and you put it in your hand and you squeezed it, wouldn't it be pliable like a water balloon or a piece of clay?
Well,
I realize that's kind of out there,
it has a liquid core. We have a liquid core that makes up a large part of the Earth, and then there is a central solid core that we know about because of seismic waves that pass through the Earth. But the solid Earth does move up and down about 3 feet when the moon is full. And and so that does make the water table vary. When I was working with the Bureau of Reclamation along the California Aqueduct, we had observation wells. And one of my jobs was to go out and change the strip charts that were recording. There was a float down there to measure the water level.
Right.
It was amazing to look at it go up and down twice a day, about a quarter of an inch. And that was strictly the passage of the moon. It was a tide in the water table.
So let's say like the San Francisco Bay would virtually drop in level according to the position of the moon.
Well, we know the tides change. We just had in January a change in tide of 9.2 feet. This only happens about every 10 years. And so I thought that that would even be a more prominent window than in December. But it actually wasn't. The December window was stronger. But it may be that the tsunami quake in Sumatra kind of stretched the whole Earth, and things quieted down except around the aftershock area, around the Indian Ocean. For a couple of weeks, there were almost no 6-magnitude quakes anywhere but in the Indian Ocean area.
Jim, in Chesterfield, Missouri, they have a private lake, a 26-acre lake. It's called Lake Chesterfield. And about a year ago, residents woke up one day in the morning, and the lake was gone. The whole thing had gone down into like a hole, like you would if you opened up your sink drain or something like that. This Sumatra quake, which was so big, is it conceivable, is it possible that it could split the Earth, split the planet so much that water from the ocean would just go rushing into this hole or this crack, and the ocean levels would drop dramatically permanently? Is that possible?
No chance of that. But we do know that water levels moved up and down in Georgia and in their wells about 15 feet. And they did it the same thing in 1964 with the Alaskan quake. And we do get oscillations of lake basins called the Seiche waves. And when the biggest quake in Europe in 1755, with the best seismic window of that year, it caused lakes to oscillate up in Switzerland and up in Scandinavia. It was about an 8.9. I don't know that they've gone back and recalculated the Lisbon quake of 1755, but it also had a giant tsunami, and the people that went rushing to miss the crushed buildings and the fires were swept up by the tsunami. They lost about 60,000 people.
When did the Richter scale instrumentations start?
Not until Charles Richter devised it mainly for Southern California in 1935.
Okay.
And they've played with various methods, and they've recalculated many of his magnitudes, and it really troubles me that there seems to be a growing belief that the 1906 quake was not an 8.2 or an 8.3. It was only a 7.7. Well, that is ridiculous. The fault ruptured for over 270 miles and with an offset of up to 21 feet, lasted for about 50 seconds, and you don't get a 7-magnitude quake doing that.
Well, how'd they get the magnitudes for these three New Madrid ones that I just said that occurred in 1811, 1812, without instrumentation? I mean, how did they do that?
They really can't. They base it on the intensity, the Rossi-Farrell or modified Mercalli intensity, which means what happens to people and things.
All right, so all these old earthquakes without the instrumentation, they could be way off.
Yeah, that they do have instruments in the same positions with quakes we have measured, and they said, okay, this one was felt for 400 miles from this position, and so that was about the same magnitude, an 1800 quake was about the same magnitude as a 1951. So by comparison with the intensity, and people often get intensity mixed up with magnitude. Magnitude is the energy, and intensity is what actually happens. And if you're on filled ground, saturated ground, the intensity is going to be a lot greater for even a fairly moderate quake than if you're close to bedrock. And so it depends upon the kind of structure and the kind of soil that you're on, or bedrock, that varies. And it's clear now that in the central part of the U.S. and in the eastern part, where the rocks are much more, they're generally older than on the west coast, and they're less faulted and broken, so they transmit the energy much more efficiently. So this 4.2 quake was probably felt for 150 miles, and it would probably be felt for 50 or 75 miles in California.
Good point. Good point. Let's go to our international line. Where are you calling from? You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hey, George. This is Al. I'm calling from the Falkland Islands.
Hello,
here.
Al. Good to have you with us.
Yeah, Jim, I was wondering if you'd ever heard of the Tesla earthquake machine, the interferometer.
Oh, yes. That was interesting. He put it on a building, and the whole building began to vibrate after about a half an hour, and he took it off because it looked like the building might have collapsed.
Yes, I've been playing with things like that with a wine jug. I have a air pressure thing, and it blows air across the jug, and it'll resonate the whole room.
Really?
Yeah. Do you know anything else about Tesla or the earthquakes that he proprietated?
The main thing I know about Tesla, he was so far ahead of his time that the government feared him, and they got all of his papers, and they've locked him up. Maybe they burned him up.
Oh, wow.
Yeah,
well,
he was a genius. Thanks. Appreciate you being part of the program. Falkland Islands, huh? West of the Rockies, you're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi, how you doing?
We're well, thanks.
I'm Josh from Salt Lake, and I'm also a geology student.
Good for you. A lot of people geology students these days, Jim Berglund.
Yeah, and, your last name's Berglund.
Berglund, that's who I am, yeah.
Yeah, it's funny because the state geologist for Utah, I think his name is Jim Kirkland, so I always
call him. Oh, very close.
But anyway, I thought it was interesting. For Christmas, just this last year, I got a book called Krakatoa.
Yes, I did too. And then it talks about animals.
Yeah.
Yes, and of course the animals responded to this tsunami and earthquake.
But what I thought was more interesting is I started reading the book on the 26th.
Oh.
That's the same day that the earthquake and tsunami occurred over in the Philippines.
Well, I bought the book on the 21st of December.
Huh.
And it sat there. You know, I said, I'm going to have to get to this. And I didn't get to it until right after. And I find in the middle of the book, they say, a geologist monitors lost and found pets. That's in the middle of the book. Didn't mention me by name, but I'm the only one.
But it was you. That was you.
Yeah, I'm about halfway through it, and it's very interesting. And,
it is.
Living here in Salt Lake, we've got the infamous Wasatch Fault, which is way overdue for an earthquake.
Absolutely.
And,
in fact, when I at a geological meeting in the middle 70s, there were some geologists here that had been working along the Wasatch Fault, and they said they considered it to be the most hazardous fault in the United States because of so many cities right on it. In fact, he said, look at this picture, and he had a color slide showing the fault scarp clearly. It's over by Salt Lake City. And he says, now, you won't be able to reduplicate this picture because they built houses. They bulldozed it and built houses all over it.
Jim, are we getting any more unusual seismic activity near Yellowstone?
It seems to have calmed down for a while, but I'm very suspicious there. When I hear that the bottom of the lake is 100 feet higher than they had last measured it, and then they tell us, well, we're not that interested in it, and they were just going to do it later, they weren't having a continuous measurement.
Yeah, they should.
Well, I think they are. They're just...
They're not telling us?
Yes,
Let's check into that. Wildcard line, you're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hello, George.
Yeah, hi.
Hi. Yeah, thank you for taking my call. Jim, I had a question. Oh, I'm from Spokane, Washington. And I was reading that in 1700, there was a really large quake in the Juan de Fuca plate, and that sent out a tsunami to Seattle, Vancouver, and then continued on to Japan, the Philippines. They didn't comment on the size. I was just curious, when it goes the distance of, say, to Japan, what size are you looking at? Do you know?
Well, they're talking about a 9-magnitude quake. Might have been a little bit more. But it caused tremendous changes along the seashore, and forests were submerged, and others were raised, and mussels and things were raised. And so geologists have gone through there, and they recognized that a giant earthquake had happened, and they tied it in with Indian legends about how villages were swamped. And then, only in the last 15 years, they tied it in with these stories from written record from Japan, where hundreds of people were killed by this mysterious tsunami that came sweeping in. Of course, that is the Japanese word meaning harbor wave. And because of the date, let's see, it was about the 28th of January. And so they tell us that the actual quake and beginning tsunami was on the 26th of January in 1700. And that was right between two extremely strong tide periods. It was in the secondary window.
It is interesting. And I had a second question, if I may.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. Art Bell had some gentlemen on from HARP a while back, and a caller asked if HARP could have influenced the tsunami, the large one recently. And he said no. And the caller had said he'd done the math. It didn't add up. And they wanted the caller to get back in touch with them because they also had done the math, and it didn't add up for them either. Do you know what they would have been referring to? Because no further comment was made on it.
About the tsunami? Well, there's some people say that it hit 80 feet high in a couple of islands that swept over tops of trees.
And I still don't think they have found nearly any of the magnitude of the deaths that that they've counted so far.
In my January issue, I said 400,000 was my estimate, and probably it's going to be $100 billion in damage.
Yeah, it could be. It
yeah.
could be indeed. Jim, I want to thank you. Get your website out one more time for us.
Okay, Syzygy, S-Y-Z-Y-G-Y, J-O-B, .com, .org. Or you can go just put on Jim Berkland on a Google, and it'll pop up, along with many, many other things. Also, if people would like to get a sample copy of my monthly newsletter, just send me a self-addressed stamped business envelope. Put a couple of bucks in it to help me with the postage and all, or the mailing and handling. And send it to Jim Berkland, B-E-R-K-L-A-N-D. But just make sure you get P.O. Box 1926.
Got to have
that. Little town of Glen Ellen, California, 95442.
Very good. They can get that address off the website as well?
Yes, indeed.
Very good. Thanks, Jim. Next time.
Thank you.
I'm George Norrie. Back in a moment. Jay-Z Knight. She's a channeler. We'll be talking to her next on Coast to Coast AM.
Something I just can't tame. I just got to have your baby.
The After Dark Newsletter. Subscribe now by calling toll-free 1-888-727-5505.
Move under my feet. I feel it.